listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
You are professional business people when you put that uniform on Sunday. Once the player forgets that it is a business, he's no longer involved with it.
Former NFL defensive lineman Leonard Marshall. Today on Now I've Heard Everything, I'm Bill Thompson. Well, this Sunday, the San Francisco 49ers will take on the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl 58 from Las Vegas. Now, this will be the Chiefs' fourth Super Bowl appearance in 5 years. But big success 1 year doesn't necessarily mean there will be great success the following year. The New York Giants dominated the NFC in 1986, and they went on to win Super Bowl 21 in January of 1987. But then, the Giants began the 1987 season the following fall 0-5. They finished with a 6-9 record and missed the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. A key player for the Giants during that time was defensive lineman Leonard Marshall. Now, during the offseason after the Super Bowl win, Marshall actually wrote a book called The End of the Line. Now, I had the chance to meet him and talk with him in early December, just 2 days after the Giants suffered an embarrassing loss to the Washington Redskins. They were up 16-0 at halftime, but the Redskins came back and won that game. But Marshall was in a surprisingly pleasant mood that day as we talked about his book. So here now, from 1987, Leonard Marshall.
The end of the line. You could take that two ways. And one way, it almost sounds like it's the end. I mean, it's over.
Well, from a certain standpoint, which Dave tried to bring out in the book, he tried to make it seem like even though things are great, it's not the end of the line for me yet.
What's wrong with the New York Giants?
Well, right now, what you're seeing is with our football team is sort of a post-mortem type of effect with the strike and everything ending and things just not being the same as they were prior to the strike and us not playing well as a football team.
Some people say it's because so many of you have books out that you can't concentrate on the game.
Well, everybody's always looking to finger point and find ways of trying to demean success or whatever. And I don't think that the fact that guys have books out and guys have made money in the off season doing commercials, endorsements, advertisements, and many different other things has too much an effect on what we do as a football team on Sunday. I think the thing that more or less takes away from your aggressiveness and your will to win on Sunday is lack of consistency and continuity within your defense and your offense. And those things you can't attribute to writing books or doing commercials or advertisements and whatever else.
Must be awfully disappointing to be up by that much at halftime and then lose.
Very disappointing. You know, it has happened to us several times this season. I mean, we're beating the Saints in New Orleans 2 weeks ago. We're beating Dallas in Dallas 24-14 in the fourth quarter. We're beating the Redskins 16-0 at halftime, and then again 19-0 in the third quarter. We're beating Dallas at home in New York up by a touchdown, and yet we're not able to put them away, you know, not able to pull a kill shot there. We're up on everybody going in the fourth quarter by a touchdown or better, and yet our offense is not able to put the killing points away to really kill them, and our defense is not able to sustain the spread that we do have and really come up as a winner.
But you know, the thing that's always fascinated me about all sports is next year you could win 12 in a row.
Well, you know, there's always a next year, but for a lot of guys, there's never a next year in this game. And the thing is that I hope that happens here now, even though we're 3-8, is that we play with a lot of pride and a lot of dignity, and we show a lot of character in doing it, and we go out as a winner in these last four ball games. The thing we have to do now is to regroup as a football team and learn how to play football the way we played a year ago and just try to salvage what we do have left this season.
You know, I've heard Bart Starr, when he's talking about his book, about Vince Lombardi's quote that winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes, it is, especially in this business, and for a lot of owners it is, because there's several guys in football now that really care about winning. And I think the guy that we have working in our operation now, Wellington Mara and Tim Mara, but especially Tim, really wants to win. A guy wants to compete and be competitive on Sunday, and they want to win football games. And that's what these guys are paid for. They're paid to make plays on Sunday, to do the best and give the best effort possible to win football games. And whether you win or lose, for a player, the thing is always to give the best effort. And you can't ask for much more than that.
When you were a kid, did you ever think that someday you'd be playing down there on Sunday afternoons with the New York Giants?
Well, not particularly the New York Giants, but it was always...
Some good team,
but it was always something that I thought about as a kid. I used to always tease my father when I was a kid about becoming a professional athlete. Some of my heroes were Joe Green, Jack Lambert. When the Steelers, I was a big, big Steelers fan, and Bradshaw happened to be a Louisiana boy himself, and being able to lead the Steelers to a couple of championships while he was playing was great. And my father was a big, big Cowboy fan at the time, and he'd dress in his blue and gray, and I'd put on a black T-shirt or whatever and Steeler cap and everything, and I'm there cheering for my Steelers, and he's there cheering for the Cowboys, and you know, I'm telling him, you know, one day, you know, you're going to be able to see me doing the same thing. And he says, oh, yeah, sure, you know. And I guess when I was growing up, some of the things I do illustrate in the book, when I was a young kid, 13, 14 years old, while working, I used to play football, but yet I used to lie and tell my mom and dad that I was actually working instead of playing football. And I'd practice football, and then I'd go to work for a couple hours in the evening and then come home. And wouldn't get home till 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night.
How is it that I'm sitting here interviewing a member of the New York Giants instead of an outfielder for the Pirates?
It's pretty different because an outfielder for the Pirates wouldn't probably be in the position that I'm in right now. With given the opportunities that I've been given or which have presented themselves to me the past few years, I think the excellent opportunity that I have had is to be in New York and be exposed to the mass media that New York has to offer, and the opportunity to do a product such as the book that I've done here recently, and to have the success as being a Super Bowl champion and being a member of a world championship football team, which a lot of guys in any pro sport never get a chance to really exceed in their efforts. So it's an excellent opportunity for me, and I'm glad to be here.
Why did you write the book right now?
I decided to do it after the season, after the Super Bowl, and I was approached by Dave Klein and some people from New American Library. And I'm going to be very honest with you. It was an excellent opportunity financially for me. It was an excellent opportunity to expose myself to the New York Giant fans, but to the rest of the people of the football world, and them get a chance to see the hard work and the success and the determination of a guy who came in and had so many knocks against him as a player in his rookie year, and yet to overcome all of that through will and determination, and to be an offspring of a product of hard work, success. You know, hard work equals success.
After this short break, Leonard Marshall talks about the unique NFC East rivalries.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 1987 conversation with Leonard Marshall.
I heard somebody say the other day, and I wish I could remember who it was I heard say it, but he said that he wished there was once again that old rivalry between the Washington Redskins and the New York Giants. He said it's faded, it's gone somewhat. It used to be a lot better.
That rivalry is still there, and that rivalry will be there as long as Bill Parcells is coaching the New York Football Giants and Joe Gibbs is coaching the Washington Redskins.
What is it? Why are there certain teams that are in that rivalry like that?
Well, the NFC East is such a tough division to begin with. I mean, you got a team in Philadelphia with a head coach by the name of Buddy Ryan, who's been known to make arrogant remarks, but yet Buddy is an excellent football coach, and he's done a fine job in Philadelphia with what he has, and he's very competitive on Sundays, and he's very articulate and very colorful. And he adds some excitement to the Philadelphia area. And when we play the Eagles, it's always an exciting game. Then in Dallas, you have the mystique of Tom Landry, who for a long time I used to always tease my father and say that Tom Landry either carries a rabbit foot underneath his hat or maybe the whole goddamn rabbit for that sake. But and then here you got Joe Gibbs. You got the good Christian, clean-cut image of a guy who's just working and got a whole bunch of old country boys that are just glad to be here and just working hard to do everything they can to win some football games. And St. Louis is more of a different operation than any of the other teams in the league, because Gene Stallings is coming as a new guy, and he's pretty much new on the scene, and his team is playing competitive football. But you know,
as long as Bidwell keeps him in St. Louis.
As long as Bidwell keeps him in St. Louis, I hear they may be coming here. So you
Baltimore,
never really know.
Baltimore might have a team again. Yeah.
You know, Baltimore Cardinals. Doesn't sound too great, but you never know what'll happen. Maybe they call them the Flying Birds or whatever.
They call them the Orioles.
Yeah. And then you got the New York Giants, which has been an old established program for a long time. The team was probably one of the greatest deals ever. The guy won the team in a card game, and I think it's very funny. Coming from New York, you know, with all the hype over gambling and everything in the metropolitan area, and then having Atlantic City and everything else there, you know, and the joke about our team being won in a card game and everything else, it kind of makes for a nice little family unity type thing there with all the teams in the NFC.
Are there ever times you wish you didn't get into football?
Not really. I wish that as a professional it could be much more fun than it really is. When I was in college, I had more fun. I had nothing for money to begin with. I traveled with the team week to week. The alumni would pretty much rally around the guys, and we'd have parties off of nothing. Basically nothing for money, and it was a lot of fun then. You had a lot more camaraderie, you had a lot more love for each guy playing the game, whereas now, you know, guys pretty much on Sundays after the game's over, they go their own separate ways, and, you know, in all season they go their own separate ways, and you don't get as close to guys. And
it's a business, isn't
it? It's more of a business now, and you're in it, and it's a production business, because at any given point in time in your career, you could end up anywhere. It's no telling what could happen, if especially if you're non-productive.
What happens to you when your career is over?
Well, I plan to step out of the football uniform and not really have to look back. Hopefully, and I try to plan to play another 5 to 6 years. Right now, I'm trying to set myself up through real estate investments and different annuities and different funds that I've been able to do through a financial plan up in Greenwich, Connecticut. And I'm looking to, when I walk away from football, to be financially secure from the game.
You really have to do that. A lot of players don't do that. They don't plan that far ahead. They think they'll play forever.
Well, some of the smarter players and the big money players have to financially plan, because if they don't financial plan, they end up giving a lot of money away to the government, and they end up blowing a lot of money, and they end up broke like some of the guys around the league or today.
Got to ask you the question I've asked every football player who's written a book this fall. Drug testing. Should players be tested for drug use?
I think it's a catch-22 situation, to be honest with you. I think the guys that show or have shown drug usage over the past should be tested. But I think it's a definite invasion of privacy of guys who are pretty much clean-cut, honest, good-living people, and have never brought a problem upon the club. I think if they're going to test the players, why don't you test the coaches? Why don't you test the general manager? Why don't you test everybody else involved, the trainers also? And then let them see how they like it.
Bart Starr, when he was in here yesterday sitting in that very chair, said he said football players, because they're such famous people and kids look up to them, he said have a special responsibility. They should all be drug tested.
I can agree with what he's saying about them having a certain responsibility, and because they're looked upon so greatly by the youth of America. But yet, I have to still support my statement there about the coaches being tested, the general manager being tested, the trainers and everyone else involved in the organization, and then let them see how it sits with them.
Is there a bad drug problem in the NFL?
For a while, there was somewhat a problem. It is leaned more from drugs now to alcohol abuse. And the direct result of that is the fact that most of the young guys that come into the National Football League, they don't have people or individuals to really sit with and really kind of guide them through the good times and the bad times. And yet they turn to the drug, the alcohol, or some other form of therapy to help them get through those times. And it's terrible because, they should have counseling programs. And see, here again, this is one of the issues that I think should have been discussed during the course of the strike, is every team having some type of consultation for players, whether it be career counseling or rehabilitative therapy from game to game, week to week.
You know, though, that there are some people in this country who think that you guys have it pretty easy. You've been handheld all through college. A lot of you have had your way through college paid. You get, we hear stories about you get cars and you have all the girls that you want, things like this. You get to the pros, you make millions of dollars a year. What else do you guys want, some people
those
say?
Those are the average blue-collar workers, though. The average blue-collar workers can't really understand the position that professional athletes are in. You are professional business people when you put that uniform on Sunday. A lot of people view our thing as a game. Everybody views it as a game, whether it be basketball, oh, it's a game, football, it's a game, baseball, it's a game. It's a business, and it has to be thought of that way by the general public and by the player, because once the player forgets that it is a business, he's no longer involved with it.
Leonard Marshall retired after the 1994 NFL season. He's 62 now and is active in a number of business ventures. Now you can get a copy of The End of the Line by Leonard Marshall by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. We may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. And while you're at heardeverything.com, don't miss my 1990 interview with Super Bowl MVP quarterback Doug Williams.
Being on one of the most respected teams in the National Football League, having that opportunity to go to the Super Bowl was a great thrill. And having the opportunity to play in it was even a greater thrill. And then winning it made it a lot more greater. And then being the MVP just put the icing on the cake.
And my 2002 conversation with Terry Bradshaw.
I'm an NFL player. And I'm a broadcaster.
You know Alf personally.
I know Alf personally.
And, of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, she is one of the world's foremost anti-nuclear activists. My 2006 conversation with Dr. Helen Caldicott.
The nuclear power industry, they're not corrupt per se, but they're scallywags. And they have to be exposed for who they really are.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.